I'd like to wish everyone here a very good evening. I'm very happy to be here with you, especially for our novices. It's indeed very wonderful that come and join this novitiate program. And here in Malaysia, it is very special because in terms of Buddhist traditions here, it is a meeting point of different traditions. So today I'm going to talk on the stages of spiritual path. For this talk, I'm going to use framework from a very famous work in the Tibetan tradition. We know that Buddhism was introduced into Tibet, fortunately, before it disappeared from India. This was in terms of a Buddhist era, about 1700 years in the Buddhist era. So Buddhism flourished in India for a period of nearly 2,000 years. And then during that time, Buddhism was introduced into different countries, different regions of the world, starting with Emperor Asoka sending missionary monks to Sri Lanka, to Burma and other Southeast Asian countries, which made up Theravada Buddhist tradition today. And then after the Buddha's Parinirvana, about 500 to 600 years after that, Buddhism started to be introduced into China. This was for a period of over 300 years. And during that period, many monks from India and the surrounding smaller countries introduced Buddhism into China, and then some Chinese monks went to study in India and brought back scriptures in the Sanskrit language. As you know, in the Theravada Buddhist tradition, the main scriptural language is in Pali. Subsequently, when Buddhism was introduced into China, the scriptures that were brought into China were mainly Sanskrit, and then in China itself was translated into Chinese. And then Buddhism was introduced from China to surrounding countries like Korea, Japan, and Vietnam. About 1,000 years after the Buddha's Parinirvana, starting about 1,100-1,200 years, Buddhist era, Buddhism was then introduced into Tibet. Many Indian teachers went there and then started translating Buddhist scriptures in Sanskrit into Tibetan. Under the patronage of some Tibetan kings, Buddhism flourished there. Like in different countries, there came also a period where Buddhism degenerated in Tibet. And then eventually, a smaller kingdom in Western Tibet, one of the emperors decided to invite a great teacher, Atisha, from India. This great teacher, Atisha, actually spent a long time in Java because he had a teacher in Java. But he agreed, he went to spread Buddhism in Tibet, and he was very influential for the whole of Tibetan Buddhist tradition. And when he went to Tibet, at that time, Buddhism had a lot of superstitious and animistic elements. So he retaught the importance of observing the monks, observing Vinayas, and that influence later on had a big impact on one Tibetan tradition called the Gelugpa. I think you may not have heard of these the four schools of Tibetan Buddhism. The earlier schools were introduced by Indian teachers, but this last school, the Gelugpa, was actually founded by a Tibetan teacher by the name of Tsongkhapa. And Tsongkhapa followed the great teachings of Atisha, and he wrote a book called The Stages of Spiritual Path. In Tibetan, it's called Lamrim. Tonight, I'm going to use that framework to introduce Buddhist teaching to you. It's very interesting because here we have novitiate program organized in the Theravada tradition with a monk from the Chinese tradition using a Tibetan framework to talk about the Buddha's teaching. So this is Malaysia. This is the uniqueness of Malaysia. Now in his work called the Lamrim or Stages of the Path, Tsongkhapa first talked about the difficulty to gain a human rebirth and the difficulty to hear the Buddha's teaching. We are born since beginner's path in samsara, the six realms of samsara, and to be born a human is very, very difficult. Sometimes in the scriptures, an analogy is given that there is a turtle that normally swim in the water, and then in the great ocean has a small wooden peg, and this turtle comes out maybe once in a while to the surface of the ocean, and this time his head come up and then just hit the round wooden peg. And it is said that to be born a human, the chances is as small as that. The reason being cycle of birth and rebirth in samsara, most of the time we are guided by negative emotions of anger, greed, ignorance. We accumulate a lot of negative karmas that normally lead us to birth in one of the three lower realms. So to be born a human is very, very rare. And so we have to treasure this human rebirth. And even when we are born a human, it is very difficult to come across the Buddha's teaching. Now, if you just consider here in the neighborhood, there may be many people. Here we have a talk tonight, but they are not interested to come, an activity like this. There are still many countries, uncivilized countries, so there you will not have Buddha's teaching. Also, in some Arabic countries today, you cannot bring any Buddhist literature, any books on Buddhism to these countries. So when you consider all this, that now that we have an opportunity to be born as a human and to come across the Buddha's teaching, we must not waste this precious human rebirth and practice seriously. I remember quite some time back, we have devotee. That time we had an English Dharma class. This devotee asked a question because she studied in Catholic schools in her early days. And then later on, she decided that she would follow the Buddha's teaching. But because she had many Christian friends, she made an observation that Christians seem to be more serious in their religion than the average Buddhist. She asked me why. And I said, yeah, I can think of one factor. Because when I was studying, I had plenty of Christian friends. When I was studying in New Zealand, half my classmates are very, very devout Catholics or Christians of other denomination. So in their tradition, you only have one chance. Whether you accept Christ, whether you accept God, you only have one chance. So you don't have plenty of time to make that choice. So in Buddhism, maybe because we talk about many rebirths, so if you don't achieve it this time, you still have plenty of opportunities in future lives. I think this is the partial picture. And I think the other thing that we don't take quite seriously is the Buddha's teaching of impermanence. So usually with young people, they think that, well, I'm still very young, and maybe when I'm older, then I can take religion more seriously. But if you combine the teaching of preciousness of human rebirth and impermanence, then you may be driven to take the Buddha's teaching more seriously. I think we have to do that, because once we lose this human rebirth, if we don't practice, then we cannot be sure of a future human rebirth. Now, in the work of Tsongkhapa, he divides spiritual path into three stages. The first stage, he called it initial stage. Here, he emphasized on understanding the working of the law of karma, that if you engage in wholesome actions, you plant the seeds for birth in three higher realms of human, of heavenly realm, and of asuras. And asuras belong to realm of beings who have also high merits but with a very bad temper. These three, comparatively speaking, are better off than the three lower realms, which are results of us performing unwholesome actions through our body, our speech, or our mind. The three lower realms, of course, refer to the realm of animals, refer to the realm of a hungry ghost, and also the hell realm. Sometimes we say that we cannot see some of the realms described. For example, we have not seen the hell realm or the hungry ghost realm. Okay, if you don't take that, then just look at the animal realm. Compared with human, I don't know whether you have been to modern day farms where they rear chicken or pigs. You go and see the conditions of in those animal farms. Very, very pitiful. in the jungle, it is even greater suffering. It is the survival of the fittest, the weaker animals being eaten by the stronger ones. Sometimes, if you just think about some form of human sufferings, like if we get burnt a little, we feel very, very painful. If you go to the Buddhist scriptures that give more detailed descriptions of the hell realms where people undergo extreme heat, then our burn is nothing in comparison to those of the sufferings of the people in the hell realm. And similarly, for us in the human realm, if we go without food for a day or two, we find it very, very difficult. But what about the hungry ghost realm? In those realms, the hungry ghosts, they have no food for a long, long period. So when we start to contemplate this, when we start to think in terms of human birth, the types of suffering we go through, and then you multiply that 1,000 times, 1,000,000 times, that will give you an idea of the sufferings in these three lower realms. Then you start to take the Buddha's teaching seriously and try to avoid doing an evil thing, and then learn to do the good. So ceasing to do the evil, learn to do the good. Sometimes we have a saying, then we add purifying the mind. These are the teachings of all Buddhas. But the foundation of our spiritual practice is the ethical side, that we lead a truly wholesome spiritual life. And when it comes to ethics, of course, there are different categories. Like for Buddhists, lay people, they observe the five precepts, take the refuge in the triple gems. So these form the very foundation of spiritual practice. The emphasis is on leading truly human life. So if you talk about leading a truly human life, then that foundation is on the Pancasila, the five precepts. Or if you further extend that into the 10 wholesome precepts, if you observe the 5 precepts, the 10 precepts, then you can be assured that in future existence, you will be born in the human realm or in the heavenly realm. In the Lam Rim teaching of Tsongkhapa, he calls it the initial stage or initial perspective. But we say initial is also the foundation. It is very important, because without this, it is pointless to talk about the next stage. Without this as the foundation, you cannot proceed to the next stage in the spiritual path. When you move to the next stage, then you say, yes, with the practice of observing the Pancasila, the 10 wholesome precepts, we can be assured of rebirth in the higher realms. But then you have to start to contemplate that even in the higher realms, even in the heavenly realms, the gods in the heavenly realm, when their merits are exhausted, they then have to undergo great sufferings. They will fall into a lower realm. Now, their case is, we can use an analogy of a very rich person, a millionaire. So recently, like when we went through an economic crisis, millionaire overnight became a bankrupt. So for a person like that to lose all the wealth in one night, that suffering is very, very great. So that is the type of suffering that gods, when they have exhausted, they are married, they are about to fall to lower realms, it's like that. And with regard to the demigods or the asuras, they always like to fight with the gods in the heavenly realm. But most of the time, they are the losers. So when they lose, of course, they suffer greater. You know, their jealousy, their hatred is increased. So nowadays, when we have just gone through war in Iraq, so the people who are in the war, they are like asuras. They like to fight. It's full of hatred. And then, of course, in the human realm, in comparison to the three lower realms, human realm is better. But just look at the birth process as a human. When we are born into this world, we came out from the mother's womb. We have been in the mother's womb for 10 months. And then when we are born into this world, it's a very, very painful process. Because it is we live the warmth of the mother's womb, and it's very cold in comparison. And the nurse wrap baby in the finest cloth, it's like having needles. You feel very, very painful. So a small baby, immediately after being born, will have to cry out because of the pain in that process. And then we grow up, and then we get sick. So when we get sick, a suffering that a lot of people cannot bear. Even a common type of sufferings, when we don't get well, get a cold, a flu, these few months, the outbreak of SARS. So we don't like to be sick, but we get sick. And many people, because of the type of life we lead, because of the food we eat today, one type of sickness, cancer, is very, very common. So if you have cancer, then it's a very, very painful experience. And then we start to get old. So when we are young, we have very good eyesight. So when we grow older, we need to wear specs. Hearing also start to fail. So if you want to see the old people, Mahindrama Temple also has a home. You can go to Tanjiang Temple. We have also residents there. You can see that many of them, when they came into our home, they could still manage by themselves. But today, they are entirely dependent on others. They are on wheelchair. Even going to the bathroom, going to the toilet, they need help. So this is an old age. And then one day, this is impermanence. Whether you like it or not, you have to leave this world. So death. And as a human, we are attached to certain things, and when we cannot get the things we like a small boy or girl going to departmental store with the parents, they see something they like, but the parents of course don't have a lot of money, so refuse to let them buy certain things for small kids. They will just cry because they are not getting what they want. When we grow up as adults, we also have that type of suffering. Only thing is we don't show it so openly. So sometimes we have to be associated with people we don't like, our enemies. We seem to have to meet them every day. And then our good friends leave us. So these are sufferings in the human realms. And when we have this body and the mind, we have the suffering of the degeneration of the body and the mind. So when you go deeper into this contemplation, you very easily understand that even in these three higher realms of human gods and the demigods called asuras, there is still sufferings, different types of suffering, maybe not the gross type of sufferings of the three lower realms. So the Buddha taught us about the suffering. So if we want to end suffering, and this refers to suffering even in the higher realms. That means the suffering of the six realms altogether, and experience a true happiness or bliss, then you have to develop renunciation. And the reason why many of you come to join this novitiate program is to experience the life of monk. This is the life of a monk is a life of renunciation. But that is not to say that you can only develop renunciation by becoming a monk. You can also, as a lay person, practice on this second stage of the spiritual path by developing renunciation, that is opposite to the attachment to this world. You understand the unsatisfactory nature of samsara, and you develop a true desire to get out of samsara. So if you can follow the Buddha's Four Noble Truths, first and the second truth talks about the truth of suffering and the cause of suffering. The Four Noble Truths talk about cause and effect. So the cause and effect of samsara is the cause of suffering, the second truth. And the cause of suffering is our negative emotions of greed, anger and ignorance. And driven by greed, anger and ignorance, we perform deeds through our body, our speech and our mind. So lead us to birth in the six realms. And when we are born in the six realms, then we undergo sufferings. So sufferings is the effect of the negative emotions, the three poisons of greed, anger and ignorance. This is the first two truths. So people who do not understand Buddhism, sometimes when they hear about the Four Noble Truths, the first truth, the Buddha talked about the truth of suffering, they say Buddhism is very pessimistic, because the first thing that the Buddha talked about is suffering. But the Buddhist teaching is not pessimistic, because in the third truth, the Buddha talks about the cessation of suffering, the bliss you get out of suffering altogether. So you cannot be more optimistic than that. But Buddhism is neither pessimistic nor optimistic. Buddhism is a teaching which is very realistic, because the reason why the Buddha started with the teaching of suffering is that every one of us have experienced suffering. If I were to ask a question to our audience here, has anybody here never undergone any suffering? Yeah, please raise your hand. Nobody will do that. So you have all undergone suffering. So of course all of us have also been born in the heavenly realms. We have been born as heavenly gods before, but maybe we don't have that good memory to remember all that. But the Buddha asks us to start with something which all of us experiences, that is sufferings. Normally we talk about cause and effect, but in this case, talk about suffering first, because everyone has gone through suffering. Then the Buddha said, don't stop there, then think about what are the causes of suffering. So give us a very clear answer in the Four Noble Truths. And then understanding that in samsara, we create the cause of suffering. That's why we have to suffer in one of these six samsaric realms. Then if we understand that and stop planting the cause for future samsaric existence, then we talk about the end of suffering, the cessation of suffering. I call liberation Nibbana in Pali, or Nirvana in Sanskrit. Nibbana is the cessation of suffering, that is the third truth. And in order to attain Nibbana, then we have to practice the path leading to the cessation of suffering, and that is the Eightfold Path. So the path is the cause, Nibbana is the effect, or the result. So again, it's a cause and effect, getting out from samsara and finally attaining Nibbana. So in his teaching called the Stages of the Spiritual Path, Tsongkhapa, the great Tibetan reformist, the great teacher of the Gelugpa tradition. Incidentally, you all may not have heard about Gelugpa, but you all have heard about the Dalai Lama. The Dalai Lama is the head of the Gelugpa tradition as one of the four major schools. But of course, he is also respected by all Tibetan teachers as a spiritual leader, as a temple leader of the Tibetan people. So system of the Dalai Lama and the Panchen Lama actually starts from this great teacher, Tsongkhapa. Tsongkhapa had two great students who became the first Dalai Lama and the first Panchen Lama. And then they had this system of reincarnated lamas. So his work called the Lamrim, or Stages of the Spiritual Path, he called this second stage the intermediate perspective, or the intermediate stage. And followers of this stage sometimes in the scriptures are described as the followers of the Savakayana. The Savaka refers to the sound hearers. So it refers to during the Buddha's time, there were many disciples of the Buddha who heard the teaching of the Buddha, heard the Buddha's teaching, the Four Noble Truths, and they practiced along that, practice the Eightfold Path, and gain liberation from samsara, became arahants. So when we come to this second stage, the intermediate stage of perspective, is referred to in Buddhism, we call beings who are classified as saints and sages. They belong to the Aryas, the family of the Aryas, rather than the worldlings that still dwell in one of the six samsaric realms. So first category of sages, the Aryas, are called the Arahants. They follow the Four Noble Truths, practice the Eightfold Path, and attain Arahantship. Then there is another category that also belongs to this, called the Pracheka Buddha. So the Pracheka Buddha, there are two types. One type are the ones who, through the deep understanding, comprehension, realization of the teaching of the conditionality, or what in Pali we call Paticca-samuppada, attain enlightenment. And their enlightenment is called Pratyeka Buddha, literally translated as solitary Buddha. So this is a second type of beings that belong to this intermediate stage along the spiritual path. These Pratyeka Buddhas, this type of beings, now this is during the time when the Buddha's teaching exists in this world. So they follow the teaching of Paticca-samuppada and gain enlightenment. But there are beings who live during the time where the Buddha's teaching is no longer in this world. And through their own efforts, they understand conditionality. They understand Paticca-samuppada and they gain enlightenment. But they are not able to teach others. That is why their enlightenment is called solitary enlightenment, Pratyeka Buddha. So actually, there is already a very, very big difference between the first stage and the second stage. In the first stage of practice, the emphasis is understanding cause and effect and not doing unwholesome deeds that will lead us to rebirth in lower realms with greater sufferings. That is the foundation. Without that foundation, it's very, very difficult for us to progress to this second stage. So like today, many of you, the precepts that you are holding, the 10 Samanera precepts, these belong to this second category of intermediate stage or perspective. And for lay people, of course, the observation of 8 precepts also belong to this category. Because when we observe the 8 precepts, we also try to develop a renunciation. So if you can develop renunciation, not get attached to this world, then you can get out. So this is a very, very important step of spiritual practice, which is common to all Buddhist traditions and one to practice seriously. Because ultimately, the purpose of the Buddha's teaching is to lead sentient beings to get out of samsara. All the major Buddhist traditions that we mentioned earlier tonight, whether it's a Theravada Buddhist tradition, the Chinese Buddhist tradition, or the Tibetan Buddhist tradition, they all have the foundation of leading a wholesome life, emphasizing on the human characteristics, practicing the 5 precepts. That is foundation. Then they all emphasize on renunciation. In the Chinese tradition, it's also heavily emphasized, same in the Tibetan tradition. And you cannot go on to the practice of the third stage without going through the second stage. And sometimes people don't understand. Now in the Buddhist literature, there is one parable of man. One day he went to a friend's new house, and in our modern day terminology, he went to a penthouse in an apartment, the top floor. And he liked that very much. The view from there is just very nice. So he asked his friend who built the house for him, because that was a very rich man. So he himself was very rich. So he got the same person, said, okay, build a same house for me. Then the person started to build the foundation, and he was very impatient. He said, why do you need to do this? I just want the penthouse. Why don't you just build a penthouse for me? So this is a parable. This is a story. We cannot build a house in the sky like that. We need to have the foundation, and then we need to build the lower floors before we can go build the higher floors, because everyone is attracted by the penthouse. So after this intermediate or the perspective or the intermediate stage, Tsongkhapa then talks about another stage. He says that it's a teaching that all sentient beings have been our parents before. Because since a beginner's past, we have been born in all different realms for countless number of times. And all sentient beings in this world not only human, including beings in the hell realm, hungry ghosts, animal realms, heavenly realms, asuras, human realm. They had been our own parents more than one time. And now, one common characteristic of all sentient beings is that no one wants to suffer. Everyone wants happiness. But although we desire, we want happiness, when we do not know the Buddha's teaching, we keep on planting causes that lead to sufferings in future. And it is like that with a lot of these sentient beings who have been our parents before, our mothers before. They do not want to suffer, but out of ignorance, they continue to plant causes that will lead them to future sufferings. When you understand this, then you develop a great loving kindness for them. And then you develop a compassion, great compassion for them. And just like our own mother or parents in this life who had given all they have to their own children. If you think about our own father and mother, they have been very, very kind to us. So we have to develop gratitude to our parents. And since all sentient beings have in the past been our parents before, and just like the parents of this life have been so kind to us, so can you think about your own liberation from samsara and leave them to continue to plant seeds for their continued suffering in the samsara? If you see your own parents are suffering, then of course out of a gratitude, out of your filial piety, you would like to go and help your own parents. So that renunciation, now when you expand the scope, you extend it to all sentient beings. So it becomes a very strong aspiration. And I think aspiration is the best English word that describes the term bodhicitta means. Sometimes if you translate it literally, bodhi means enlightenment. Citta is the heart or the mind. The mind for enlightenment, but it's more than that. It's a great aspiration to gain bodhi. And to gain bodhi, this bodhi refers to the enlightenment of Sammasambuddha, of a Buddha. So this aspiration to lead all sentient beings to liberation is called development of a bodhicitta, the aspiration of a Buddhahood. But to attain Sammasambuddha, one has to practice the Bodhisattva path. It is like this for our own teacher, Gautama Buddha, or Sakyamuni Buddha. In the scriptures of a different Buddhist tradition, it was recorded that our own Buddha, during the time of ancient Buddha, Dipankara Buddha, in Mahindrama Temple, we have a very nice prayer hall, and if you go around, you see the Buddhas of the past, and one of them is called Dipankara Buddha. And it's recorded that during Dipankara's Buddha time, our own Buddha, he could have gained liberation then, but he developed an aspiration to want to follow the example of the Buddha, and he developed bodhicitta, the vow to gain Sammasambuddha. And to gain Sammasambuddha, he has to practice the Bodhisattva path for a very, very long time, practicing what is called the paramitas, the six paramitas, sometimes the ten paramitas. Just like the beings in the second stage practice the Four Noble Truths and aim for Nibbana, now the beings that go to this stage, they practice the six paramitas and eventually gain Buddhahood. When they are practicing the paramitas, they are called bodhisattva in Pali or bodhisattva in Sanskrit. So you see, even in the Pali scriptures, the Buddha before enlightenment is referred to as the bodhisattva. For example, the prince when he was born was called the bodhisattva. When he was a prince, and after that, when he renounced for 6 years, he practiced. Before attaining Buddhahood in Bodh Gaya, he was called the Bodhisattva or Bodhisatta. And also in the Jataka stories, that is the past lives, how he practiced the Bodhisattva path. So in the Jataka stories is on how he practiced the six perfections of Dana, that is generosity, Sila, morality, and then also practicing Kanti, forbearance, sometimes translated as a patience. and viriya, vigor, and also practice of contemplation and wisdom. So these are the six paramitas. So beings that tread on this are described as a bodhisattva. And in Tsongkhapa's work, he described this as the stages, the higher stage or the higher perspective. But we must understand that this stage, the bodhisattva practice, is based on renunciation. Without renunciation, there can be no bodhicitta. And a lot of people today, especially in the Mahayana tradition, misunderstand this. So if you don't develop first renunciation, then there is no bodhicitta. Because renunciation and bodhicitta start from same base. It is the desire to get completely out of sufferings. In the first case, for oneself, emphasis for oneself. In the second case, yes, for oneself, but also to help other sentient beings. Because without practicing these six paramitas to help sentient beings, one cannot attain Sammasambuddha. So this is a very important, very interesting work of great Tibetan teacher. And I think it is also very useful for us, because here then we can see how all the different Buddhist traditions fit in. So in the case of all Buddhist traditions, firstly is the base, the foundation of leading a truly human life, practicing a morality, ceasing to do evil, learn to do good. And then we move on to purifying the mind and to develop calmness, to develop insight, or what in the Pali tradition, the terminology of to develop samatha and to develop vipassana. In this work of Tsongkhapa, there is one great chapter on samatha vipassana practice. In the teaching of the six paramitas, the six perfections, the last two refer to practice, also meditation and also wisdom of chana and also on panya. So this is another terminology for samatha and vipassana. So you can see how these different Buddhist traditions fit in together. And then when one is more serious, then one goes into developing renunciation. Then, of course, if you want to get out of samsara, then you can follow the examples of the personal disciples of the Buddha during his time. That within one life, if they practice seriously, they can attain nibbana and get out of a samsara, that very life. But we can also choose the example of the Buddha. Just like he, during the time of the ancient Buddha, developed bodhicitta. And then after that, he had to practice for long, long period of time, practice the six perfections or the six paramitas, and ultimately gain Buddhahood. So we have come a long way describing the stages that lead from ordinary worldlings in the six realms to becoming arahants, Paccekā Buddha, ultimately attaining Sammasambuddha. But we have to come down to earth and build that foundation. So it is important for us to put the Buddha's teaching into everyday's life. This is very important because in the recent years, I come into contact with many Christians and also Muslims. And even in their traditions, sometimes I cannot help thinking that they are more serious in putting their own religious teaching into everyday life compared with Buddhists. And if we don't do that, I think there is not a very good future for our religion. Because we only understand intellectually, but we do not know how to put these good teachings into practice. So to build that foundation, to be a human decent being, then we have to be able to put the Buddha's teaching into our daily life, so that whatever we are, whatever role we play, we become a better person. If we are a student, then we are a good student. If we are a son or daughter, then we become good sons and daughters of our parents. And if you have family, you become a good husband or good wife. Once you have your own children, you must become a better mother, a better father. Because if you don't do that and you follow the Buddhist faith, your children will start to have suspicion. What is all this? So they can be easily attracted by other religious faith. First, learn to do this, to be a better person in whatever role we play as a student, son, daughter, husband, wife, mother, father, and so on and so on. Then we have a hope for ourselves, because we truly lead a human life, because this is the very foundation of our spiritual path. If we don't even do this, then forget about all the things that we talk about in the subsequent stages. So one problem we have in our society now, especially now during the school holidays, there are a lot of activities, a lot of camps going on. We have come across many young people during the camps. In our society today, we have a big problem. This problem I saw when I studied in New Zealand more than 20 years ago. They have gone through that, but we have gone through the process of industrialization. Before, we used to live 3 generations, sometimes 4 generations under the same roof. Now, young people, when they get married, they want to be independent. Especially if you go to Tanxiang Temple, you just look across, there are a lot of flats, apartments, and young couples live by themselves. So they have a very bad relationship with their children, because they spend very little time with the children. And then the children today are very, very different. During our time, we don't have this modern ICT technology, that you go into the internet. A lot of youngsters, they go into the internet, they get influenced. And the problem is a lot of parents, they are busy making money, and then sometimes they are scared of computer, but they don't know what their children are getting out, from that computer. It's a very, very serious problem. So relationship between children and their parents are very, very bad. And then you have a problem family, leads to a lot of a social problem. One thing is that youngsters today, they do not know how to develop gratitude to their own parents. So when we have a training camp, we emphasize a lot on developing gratitude. Now, in this aspect, it's quite interesting that this novitiate program idea actually started in Thailand. Because even in Sri Lanka, if you want to become a monk, you have to make up your mind, and then that's for life. No such thing as a short period, this novitiate. But in Thailand, everybody, a male, goes through that. I was told that for the Thai men to become a novice monk for a period of anything, normally 3 months during Wasa month, they go one Wasa, and then the Katina, after that, they go back to lay life. And I was surprised that at first I didn't know. When I talked to a lot of Thai people, most of them, they enter into monkhood for anything from 1 week to 3 months, or sometimes longer. Their motive is to transfer merits to their parents. And I think that is a very, very beautiful tradition, because that is a form of showing your gratitude to the parents who have been so kind to you. I hope that, especially for our younger generation of people, we should develop this gratitude. Okay, I think I will leave some time for you to ask any questions. Okay, thank you for the question. It's a very good question. In the Mahayana tradition, the teaching of vipassana also, samatha and vipassana, and the answer is yes. In Tian Thai school, there is the great teacher called Zhizhe, and he wrote a book called Zi Guan Fa Men. Zi Guan, Zi is a samatha, is calm down. Guan is the vipassana, or developing insight. So in Zhizhe's work, this is the founder of the Tian Thai school of Chinese Buddhism, there is a detailed description of practicing of samatha and vipassana. In Chinese, it's called 紫 and 冠. Just like I introduced to you just now in Tsongkhapa's work, the Lam Rim, there's one whole chapter also talking about Samatha and Vipassana. And then, of course, in the Zen, Japanese, pronounced as Zen or Chinese, as a Chan, Buddhist tradition, developing of wisdom is very heavily emphasized. This is Vipassana. They have their own methods of doing that, which sometimes seems very odd to people who don't understand that Chan or Zen tradition. Okay. On gratitude meditation, you can go to this book, The Stages of the Spiritual Path. Actually, Tsongkhapa wrote three works on this Lam Rim. One is a very extensive, huge volume, and then one medium, and then one very short Lam Rim. Sometimes if you go to the big volume, you get lost, you know, because it's so rich. But I can recommend you one book called The Path to Enlightenment. The original publisher is Wisdom Publication. And that book is very easy to recognize because it has the picture of the Dalai Lama on the cover. Our present Dalai Lama has written a book. Actually, it is transcribed from a series of teachings he gave in America, I think, you know. And then they published this book. This book is very easy to read. In this section, the gratitude meditation comes as under the teaching of developing a bodhicitta. Because, you know, if we develop gratitude to our own the mother in this life, we have to do that first. And then we just extend it. We say that all sentient beings have been our mother before. That gratitude then develops into great compassion and bodhicitta. It goes something like this. It's easiest to do this with a mother. That chapter talks about imagining the hardship the mother has to go through in bearing the child for 10 months. So even when we were inside the mother's womb, sometimes we start kicking, you know, and mother is not a lot of fun. When the baby inside does something like this, the birth process itself is a very, very painful process for mother. In the Chinese Buddhist tradition, birthday is called Mother's Suffering Day. It's a day when mothers give birth to us, she went through great sufferings. A baby cannot survive by himself or herself. Without mother, we won't survive for a few days. So we are totally dependent on the mother for warmth, for food. You see the sacrifice of a mother. So if you wet, if a baby wets the bed, the mother will move the baby to the drier side and she herself will then go and sleep on the wet side of the bed. So think about the mother of this life doing all this to us. And then as we grow up, you just think about the way, even nowadays, the parents, for them to send their children to receive the best education. So maybe after high school, they're going to a university. Sometimes it's the whole life saving. The parents can just give to the children to go and study overseas. Can you imagine that type of sacrifice? So like that, you think in terms of the love that a mother give to her own children. How can you not develop that gratitude? Firstly, you develop this gratitude. Then you expand that to all sentient beings. Because like our own mother, this life, these other beings in our previous existence as our mother had treated us like that before. With that, we should develop that great gratitude to all of them. And that becomes bodhicitta. So this is what is called, you know, the gratitude meditation. So there is a very beautiful part in this, the Dalai Lama's work. You can get this book, you can get this book very easily in the KL bookshops. Maybe you can even get it in Sukihon too, I don't know. You can now get the Indian edition, the original American edition costs about $30 to $40. The Indian edition costs about $14, $15. It's very, very good work. Give you a good grasp understanding of Tsongkhapa's teaching of the Lam Rim or stages of a spiritual path. Of course, as a layman, we have worldly commitments that prevent us from having the ability to devote ourselves completely to threading the spiritual path. But that is not to say that there's anything to stop us to practice, because Even if you go to read the scriptures, there are descriptions of lay people during the Buddha's time. They attain arahantship. So it's possible. At least if you are not able to practice very seriously, don't have a lot of time, then a program like this for 1 week, you can come and experience the life of a monk leading a simple life. I think that would be a very good experience. I know of Tibetan teacher who once told me that he had some Westerners who took the teaching very seriously. He was talking about giving the teaching on Lam Rim, and then he was telling us that subsequently he communicated with his German student, and one day he met him, I think in Thailand. He met this person whom he had not been in personal contact, but they have been writing, and through correspondence he had noticed that this German layperson had been very serious in his practice. And it's shown a very good signs of spiritual progress. Then he saw him, when he gave this teaching, he said that this person had attained a renunciation. And when we asked him what he meant by this person had attained a renunciation, he said that this German Buddhist is sure of getting out of samsara. Although he was a lay person, he took the practice very seriously. This is a few years ago. This Tibetan teacher related this particular German student of his to us. He's still a layman. So yes, it is more difficult, but you can attain very high level of spiritual attainment. Nothing to stop you if you practice seriously.